Blog Talk Radio.
Are you living every day from your heart or from your mind or from your roles that you play each day? Or are you living from your own soul? What difference does that make in your life? What if you lived with a continual intention to create a heart connection with others? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their lives through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the 30 powerful love lessons for your soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Lee McCormick is the founder of several treatment centers, the Integrative Life Center in Nashville, the Ranch Recovery Center in Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu. He founded Spirit Recovery Incorporated to produce healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. To help people reclaim their lives, Lee authored the Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal and is co-author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Blog, the new Heart Reconnection Guidebook. He is also executive producer of the documentary Dreaming Heaven, true story of 17 people over 5 days at Teotihuacan. I don't know if I could pronounce that correctly. Anyway, I'm delighted to welcome you today, Lee McCormick.
Well, thanks. I'm glad I could be here.
Yeah, well, you have an incredible background. You're providing such healing for so many people. But you talk about spirit, so please share with me how all this came about. How did you create these treatment centers, and what's the focus of them? And then how you came to organize this book, too.
Sure. Well, of course, my relationship with the recovery business and the healing work and transformation and life, you know, I call it just waking up, you know, waking up to ourselves, waking up to how much greater life is than the way most of us were taught to see ourselves in the world. You know, it all started through my own experience, me checking myself into a treatment center 20 years ago. And that experience really became, it became an inspirational experience for me, that I realized so much about the, what I call the backside of our culture, you know, the backside of our reality and the whole truth of what goes on, you know, in our homes and in our families and in our relationships, things that I had never experienced myself growing up. But once I was really exposed to the depth of the trauma and the woundedness and the legacies that we inherit and all the mess that we inherit, it really made sense of why, for most all my life, the world we live in just felt incongruent. Our culture felt incongruent to me. I didn't understand what I was feeling, but something didn't feel right, you know, as a child and as a young adult. And when I had that experience in treatment and the experiences, sharing those experiences with all the people that I was in that program with, it just clarified a lot of things. And that inspired me. It was like, you know, we humans, we're really amazing beings. And we rarely, unless there's some crisis in our life, we rarely really look outside or beyond the frame of life that we've been taught as a child or as a young adult. We rarely look beyond our cultural norms, you know, the religious overlays, the family overlays, the community overlays, education. There's so much vested in our becoming compliant with the world that we live in that it's rare that we really go beyond that to experience the rest of ourselves or experience life on a greater, more open scale, you know. And so that inspired me. The recovery work was inspirational. And I also felt that there's whole aspects to what we might experience in a treatment center, in a healing program, that there were aspects left out of that could benefit us, you know, that could help improve the outcomes in mental health and addictions work. And so I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew that I wanted to do something. So I just got in the middle of it and went to work 21 years ago. And it's been a...
So I have a question here. What do you think is the reason that so many treatment centers and programs seem to not succeed? Because people, you know, they leave and then they come back in again and then they leave and, you know, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Well, it's a fairly complex situation. And personally, what we do different in the programs that I've created from traditional treatment is the foundation that we work from is we meet each client as a unique individual. You are a unique individual. No one in this world has lived your experiences. No one else in this world inherited your place in your family. You are a completely unique individual. And as a unique individual and as a human being, you have within you the ability to evolve in your awareness, to take responsibility for your happiness, for your life, for your choices. And every bit of that it's an inside-out process as opposed to the way so much treatment is perceived, that it's a matter of, like, the way we're taught is that in order to be a good recovering person, we're going to teach you the rules, the parameters, the behaviors, the things you need to do to be a quote-unquote good recovering person. So that's an outside-in point of view. That we have a program, we're going to introduce you to the program, you need to be compliant with the program, and if you are, then you will be successful in our version of recovery. The way I approach this work is that you're a unique human being, you happen to be in a very conflicted state, you have behaviors, beliefs, traumas, actions, reactions that are undermining the quality of your life. And the truth is, it's not about whether you're good enough. It's not about whether you're good, bad, right, or wrong. It's about you and us, our treatment program, guiding you and coming into an awareness of what is the cause and effect that's driving your life. What are you believing about yourself in your core? What are the traumas, the heartbreaks, the issues that you've experienced in life that have broken your faith in yourself and broken your trust in yourself and in life itself? So how can we help unravel you unravel your story, unravel your behaviors so that we can get to the root causes of where this disease is in your relationship to yourself and your life. That completely changes the outcomes.
That's amazing. I've kind of worked that way in counseling, and so many people are looking for a particular treatment model, you know, as if that's the answer. And these treatment models are just a tool that's being used. But it's really what you're talking about, getting down to the root cause.
Sure. And, you know, we have so many great modalities. You know, the medical side of this, we have a whole array of medications. We have a whole integrative side of approaching wellness and healing, you know, with nutraceuticals and amino acid therapies, and the brain science that's evolved and developed over the last 20 years. We have a fantastic toolbox to work with.
Mm-hmm.
The foundational perspective, though, that we're working from is where I see the big issue being, is that to define an individual by their behaviors, to define a person by their story, to label a person as the disease is just not true. And so we go off down a rabbit hole when we want to use our knowledge and project that onto an individual and see them as anything other than just a human being. We're all human beings. That's what we are. And we have a whole array of issues that we inherit or that we create for ourselves. And we're not the issue. We're the one that created or inherited the issue. I'm the one responsible for addressing my issue, but I'm not the issue. My name's Lee. I'm a human being. I was addicted to a pattern of behavior. I was addicted to a substance. But that addiction is not what I was. It was the result of years of choices that I had made. It was the result of me doing the best I could to cope with the world that I was living in, not having a clue how to live my life any other way until the suffering got so bad that I came mm-hmm. around and had the opportunity to pay attention.
I'd like to add something when you mentioned addiction, that I would venture to say that most people are addicted in some way, but we label certain addictions as healthy, like an addiction to exercising, and you've got to get up every day and got to do it. If you can't do it for a few days, you could be really depressed, angry, all kinds of emotions can come out, or someone who's I'm using the word addicted, but, you know, compulsively working all the time. If they have to stop working or compulsively planning vacations or whatever it is. So
yeah, absolutely.
Send in judgment of others.
Well, you know, it's pretty simple to just say, look, if you were to just put everything away, shut all your devices off, turn off the telephone, if you were to step out and just go walk to a park and just sit down under a tree, how comfortable are you just hanging out with you and doing what we would call doing nothing, which is actually not true. We're never doing nothing. But how comfortable are you in your own skin when there's nothing to distract you, nothing to be working on, nothing to be worrying about, nothing to be achieving or accomplishing? How comfortable are you just being you, just being here now? You know, it's a big question. Yeah.
So that's what's going on in our society, but we label certain behaviors as really negative and others as positive because they seem to bring some good results.
Well, it serves a system. You know, a workaholic's a great employee because they're serving the system. But are they serving their heart and soul? Are they serving the truth of who they are? You know what I mean? Is your life enjoyable? And is your life truly fulfilling on a heart and soul level, not just on an ego level?
Right, and is it fulfilling for the people around you too? So I would like to get to the next part, which is your book. And one of the authors, Joan Borisenko, I had the pleasure of interviewing her as a featured expert on my Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me summit. And she's just one beautiful person in your book. So tell us about how this book came about, the Heart Connection Guidebook. You know, how did it start? What made you bring these people together?
Well, it actually kind of started like you and I right now. We're having this conversation about healing and recovery work and, you know, where we're at as humanity and the issues in our culture. Joan, myself, my wife, Joan's husband, Gordy, Holly Cook, who is a therapist that I work with at our Integrative Life Center here in Nashville. Mary Faulkner, who is the primary writer on the book. Mary and I also wrote the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book together. Gary Seidler, who produces U.S. Journal trainings and conferences, mental health and addictions professionals, you know, conferences. And Dan Barmettler. There was a whole crew of us. We were at a conference in Santa Fe together, and Joan and Gordy live in Santa Fe. And we had all gone over to Joan's house, and we're having this conversation about the state of healing and consciousness, and just the state of how we're living in our world today and how we live in this culture in the U.S. today. And I've always been the guy in the treatment business that challenged the norms. I just don't buy into the official excuses as to why mental health and addictions treatment's not more effective, because they're excuses. The industry, the treatment industry, the treatment, and it is an industry today, the treatment business has a whole array of excuses to deflect responsibility for why the outcomes aren't better, you know? And I'm like, that's not okay. We're missing mm-hmm. something. We, the professionals, have a responsibility to keep questioning ourselves, to keep taking our paradigm apart until we can find a more effective way of connecting with each individual that comes in looking for help. And out of that conversation with all those people in the room, it was like, you know what, guys? Like, look at this. Between us, there was 300 years experience in medicine and therapy and shamanism and in spirituality. I mean, just an amazing array of experience in that room. And I said, you know what, between us, we can create a new paradigm here, because we've all lived in this realm for so long, and we all see opportunities that are beyond the norms. And if we'll weave this together, I bet we can open up a whole new paradigm. And that's where the idea for the book started.
And I just realized I was calling it the Heart Connection, and it's the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. So tell us why you said that.
Well, you know, we're born into our little bodies. We're born into this world. We come into our bodies. We're not our body. We're the consciousness, the light, the spirit that animates our body. You know, when our body dies, we don't. We travel on. So a lot of beliefs around that, a lot of ideas around that. And the truth is, we do not know for sure. But I do know that we don't die when our body does, right? So we're born into these bodies. In our body, we inherit the epigenetic imprint of our family, of our legacy, going back 5, 6, 7 generations. So we inherit the reality of our ancestors when we come into this world. We inherit the reality of our parents and our grandparents. And the issues that we're facing are multi-generational. Well, one of the situations that occurs when we come into this world is we're born with a heart connection to the Creator, to God. We are an expression of the one that created us. So through that heart connection, we always have direct access to spirit. And what happens is, as we are domesticated to fit into the world, to fit into our family, to fit into our religions, as we're domesticated and programmed to be members of society, it pretty much demands that we abandon our own internal connection to spirit and we turn our attention around and give our attention to the world, and then we start to chase the values of the world, start to look for solutions in the knowledge of the world, and we try to build identities of good enough based on the judgments and opinions of the world. And in doing that, we turn our attention away from our own heart and soul, the center of ourself, in a relationship to our own spirit. So heart reconnection is simply bringing our attention back. It's reconnecting to our own heart, our own spirit, our own goodness, our own innate good enough, you know, that we don't need to prove anything to this world to have value. We were born of value.
That's so true. So how do we know if we're living from our heart or from our mind?
Well, that actually, for me, that came about as a result of a lot of practice, you know, in the sense that the Buddhists practice meditation. It's a matter of developing self-awareness, coming into an awareness of the difference in how it feels to be in your head, to be in that frequency of thought, of the mind, of knowledge, which is inherently anxious. It's inherently impatient, or it's kind of like a roller coaster emotionally, right? You have wonderful days and you're all excited, and then you have terrible days and everything's going to fall apart. And, oh my God, what am I going to do? And so we ride this roller coaster when we live in our mind. And we're only as good as our last judgment or opinion, because we believe ourselves. When you're living in your mind, you believe what you think, you know, and our thoughts are pretty bizarre. We don't even know where our thoughts are coming from. A lot of them come out of the database of the mind, but then we have, I mean, we all have bizarre thoughts. Like, you know, you'll think something and say to yourself, where did that come from? Right? We all know that. When you're living from the heart, and you're living from that seat of your soul within yourself, there's a sense of calm. While there can be fear and there can be anxiety, there is a sense of calm underneath that. It's developing what's required is that we redevelop, reconnect, and develop a relationship again with our heart and spirit. And it just, it takes practice. And there's guidance, there's tools, there's practices in the book that support that. You know, it's like Jesus is quoted as saying in the Bible, you know, you live in the world and not of it. And so we have to learn to discern and differentiate the different aspects of ourself, and where is my attention? Where am I living from? Where am I choosing from? Am I choosing from the knowledge and the frequency of my mind, or have I dropped down into my body? Have I dropped down into my center? One is, you know, the mind is impatient and the heart is incredibly patient. It's just, it's eternal. So it doesn't have to have things happen right now.
But there's a piece in here. When you look out to the world, I mean, you need to achieve in school and you need to get a job and you need to be successful at work and start a business and succeed at it. So when you're focused on all of those kinds of things, it can be difficult to focus on your heart connection, because the evidence out there seems to be different.
Well, it is, but if you look at the outcome, look at the nature of our world today, how much peace and resilience and contentment and sweetness do you really witness going on in the world around us on a day-to-day basis? You know, so if we want the quality of our life to be different, to be better, then we're going to have to shift some things in how we live our life and where we're living our life from. And that's the point of the Heart Reconnection Guidebook.
It's to help us as individuals become that difference that we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and out of that, we just innately recover faith in ourselves. You know, as we connect to our heart, reconnect to our heart and spirit, we realize the goodness that is innate in us. And that's not from the ego. You know, the Creator didn't make a mistake creating us. Life didn't make a mistake in our being here. There's an intention. There's an energy.
I have a beautiful friend that really had a tremendous addiction, and she said things to me about herself that, you know, I'm a bad person. And it was so painful to hear that from her. Because, yes, she may have had some bad actions. She may have hurt some people. But she wasn't a bad person. Her heart was good.
And she
could be very loving.
And she learned that way of being, because we're born into a world where judgment is just inherent in everything that goes on here. So we don't know ourselves, and we don't know a relationship with life apart from every experience being based in judgment of good, bad, right, wrong. It's a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not natural. And we do
all
it
right,
really
so
well.
I have another question. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between faith, belief in your heart reconnection work?
So, and that this is a great question for everybody that's listening to sit with, because each of us needs to come to our own decisions around this. We each need to come to terms with what is the difference in faith and what is the difference in belief to me. For me, belief is based largely in knowledge, and belief is, it's like a fabric woven together by agreements that I make about what I will believe. So you teach me something, and I take that information in, and I agree, and I say, yes, I'll agree with that. I think I'm going to say that's true. I'm going to make that belief that you've taught me true for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I give the energy of my own faith to that belief. So beliefs are learned. Beliefs are largely based in knowledge, can be based from experience, but beliefs are interpretations that come through and of the mind that are passed on from one generation to the next, or that we develop for ourselves through life experience. Faith for me is a relationship with the mystery. To me, true faith is faith in the unknown. I don't have beliefs around my relationship to spirit. I have a relationship to spirit. I don't really characterize it. I don't really need to understand it. It's a feeling. It's a felt sense. It's a calmness. It's a trust in the unknown. For me, that's how I characterize faith. Faith is not about right, wrong, good, bad. There's no judgment in true faith. Beliefs can largely be completely enmeshed in judgment and good, bad, right, wrong. Beliefs are of the mind, and faith is of the spirit.
I would say that having faith in the unknown is scary, and a lot of people want to know. They think there's a way to control and to know.
Well, because the unknown, yeah, we have an innate fear of the unknown, just as we have this cultural terror of death, because death is the unknown. Well, the truth is we're all going to
mm-hmm.
die. And the one that created us knows exactly what we're doing here, right? Life, God, whatever language you want to use, knows exactly what we're doing here, knows exactly what we are, knows exactly what happens when we transition out of our bodies. I don't know those things. I am never going to figure that stuff out. And so I
mm-hmm.
just go with the fact that you know what? All of the facts and the truth behind our human experience here, the Creator knows that, and that's the Creator's business. I'm not going to get up in the Creator's business. I'm going to live with responsibility for myself and the quality of my life, and the quality of what I bring into this human world during my lifetime. And beyond that, it's all cool, because I don't have any control over it. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to live a life that I love living.
And bring that love to the people that associate with you.
Sure. Well, that's fun. I mean, you know, we humans are tribal beings. And it's really unfortunate that we have become so so segregated from one another and separated from one another. You know, we're so isolated in our culture. Like, we were way better off when we lived as a tribe and we worked together and we ate together and, you know, relationship to life when we lived as a tribe. This every man for himself thing is not working out.
And that's why I loved watching Anthony Bourdain when he traveled around the world and shared meals with people in all different cultures. It gave us a sense that we're all the same.
You know, with you 100%.
So I want to go on to some more interesting questions. You talk about suffering as a gift. What is the gift of suffering or the gifts of suffering?
So suffering is what I call a blessing curse. So there is an aspect of suffering which is literal physical suffering, you know, from having a disease or chronic pain, issues like that. That level of suffering is innate in having a physical body. The statement around suffering can be a gift pertains to suffering as in emotional suffering, as in the suffering of self-inflicted woundedness or self-inflicted suffering, you know, sadness, drama, fear, hangovers, heartbreaks, having a script in your mind of all the reasons why you're not good enough or you're not worthy, you know, or you're a bad person, like you were talking about your friend a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
That level of suffering, should we ever come to a point in our relationship to our suffering that we actually have had enough, and that suffering becomes that trigger point where we say, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. I've got to change my life. At that point, that suffering then becomes an ally to us. It's our suffering that calls us out and finally gets us to pay attention to the fact that for the most part, it's us doing it to us. You know, the sadness, the abuse, the heartbreak that existed in my life for so long, I was perpetuating that on myself and I didn't know any better. But it was really largely me doing it to me. You understand what I'm saying? And I didn't know any better.
Well, I'd like to add that illness, actual physical illness, has also been seen as a blessing by many people. I remember someone who had AIDS and said he feels like it taught him how to love. And when you get really sick or you age and you start to have these problems, it normalizes you. You might have been arrogant before, and then you see.
Well, you know, we never know, because one of the most tragic aspects of, I guess one of the most tragic aspects of our relationship to life is a victim-minded consciousness. When we see ourselves as victims, we cut ourselves off from the light of what else might be revealed through our experiences. You know, and yes, suffering can be horrible and it's real, and there's always more. There's always another side to it, you know, and it's up to us to we decide for ourselves through our responses, through our reactions, through our choices, whether we will be victims or not. You can live horrible experiences in this life and never subscribe to being a victim. You just simply went through some horrible experiences. But when we subscribe to being a victim, it's a poison.
So you say that we're not our thoughts, and that seems to have a lot to do with whether we feel like a victim or not.
Well, yeah, do you believe yourself? I mean, we have thoughts. Do we believe everything we think? If you do, you have problems. You know, just because I think something, I think a lot of things, and I'll hear a lot of thoughts in my mind. I'm not my thoughts. If I'm my thoughts, then who's hearing them? Who's listening? You're not your thoughts. You're the one that's listening. You're the one that hears those thoughts. And so I am 100% responsible for how I respond to the thoughts that come into my mind. And so, you know, that applies directly to those obsessive compulsive relationships, or whether that obsessive compulsive relationship, it may be an addiction, it may be a person, it may be, you know, negative self-talk or a pattern of self-judgment or judgment of others. I am completely responsible for giving my attention to that loop of thought. I am completely responsible for agreeing or choosing not to engage in that pattern of thought. So one of the processes of the heart reconnection work is to learn to break the patterns of thought that sabotage us and undermine our having a loving, positive relationship with ourself and our heart and our soul.
And I have another question here. You talk about the roles that we play in life versus our soul or our soul's agenda.
Right. Well, we all live a lot of roles. Now, like, you know, I ask people in groups, I'll say, make me a list of all the roles that you're living right now or the roles that you've lived.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been a son. I've been a husband. I've been a father. I've been cowboy. I've been a commodities trader. I've been, you know, a treatment center owner. I've been a recovering person. I've been a lot of things in my life. And there was a big stretch of my life where I completely identified by my role, that my identity was that role, and that my sense of goodness, my sense of self-value and self-esteem was directly connected to how well I was performing in my role. It was as though I didn't know myself apart from the roles I was living, and I lost myself in those roles. Well, as I woke up in my recovery, I realized I'm not the roles that I'm living. I'm the one that takes the role on. So it's not so different from being cast in a play or being cast in a film. I'm living in the movie of Lee world, and Lee determines which roles he's going to take on, and Lee decides whether he believes or identifies himself by that role or not. And my responsibility is to always stay grounded in myself, always be grounded in the truth of who I am, be grounded in my heart, my spirit. You know, that's my first responsibility in this life. And beyond that, then I can adopt and adapt and take on any role I want. But if I give all my faith to that role, or I demand that that role fulfill me, then I've turned it inside out. The roles that we live are not responsible for fulfilling us. Our fulfillment comes from the quality of life that we're living from the inside out, not the quality of accomplishment we create from the outside in, if you understand what I'm saying. The amount of money I make doesn't make me a better person. It doesn't make me a better person. It doesn't give me more value. What gives me value is the quality of how I walk through the world and the way I connect to people and the simple things and how I live my life. But our culture's turned all that upside down.
Right. We do need a certain amount of money just for comfort, for basic comfort. But beyond that, it doesn't serve necessarily.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not that, you know, again, it comes back to what I said earlier, I think, you know, how comfortable and okay are you when you're just by yourself and you're not doing anything? How comfortable are you going, you know, walking around town alone by yourself, just checking out the world? How comfortable are you going and sitting down and having a meal alone? How comfortable are you just sitting under a tree and watching the world go by.
That one about having a meal alone, I've known many people. I was on a tennis team with these really aggressive, competitive women. And when I mentioned going to a restaurant at night alone, they said, I could never do that. They could never go into a restaurant alone at night. You know, they might be able to go to a lunch place. As an example, you know, like, what are they afraid of? Or what's, why are they not comfortable? So I've had that experience.
Well, see, yeah, and so there's a dis-ease in their relationship with their own company. You know, if I'm not comfortable being with me, then how in the world am I expecting somebody else to think that I'm great?
That's for sure. All right, I have one last question, and then I want you to tell about your book and your work. You talk about the medicine wheel format in the book. What do you mean by that?
Well, the medicine wheel, of course, it's a church of sorts. So a medicine wheel represents a circle of life. Literally, medicine wheels are big circles, and they hold the energy of the four directions. So for our medicine wheel, it's east, south, west, and north. And it also represents the cycles of life. You know, when you've lived life for enough years, you realize that so much of life really is cyclical. Like, what goes around does come back around, right? You start meeting decisions you made 10 or 15, 20 or 30 years ago. You run into the cause and effect of that as you go around the wheel of life over and over. So we use the medicine wheel because it's circular, and because this journey of self-awareness, of healing, of transformation, and of creating the life that we're living from day to day, that journey is a great circular journey, and it's not linear, and we're never done with ourselves. We're never done, you know, revisiting the turn of the seasons. We're never done in our transformation, in our awareness, in the ways that we relate and live and breathe and eat and move. So the medicine wheel provided an opportunity to create a cycle and to tie into the wheel the values of each of the directions, which reflect our human cycle of life and the fabric of relationships that make up our life and our world.
Well, this book has so much wisdom in it. Tell us how people can get it, and also tell about how they can contact you or come to one of your treatment centers.
You bet. You can contact me through integrativelifecenter.com. It's integrativelifecenter.com. That's our program here in Nashville, and it's really an amazing treatment, healing, recovery program. We work with everything from addictions to straight mental health issues and eating disorders, depression, trauma. It's just a fantastic community. And then I also lead journeys to Teotihuacan in Mexico and to Peru. I have a home and a Mexican family that we have a boutique hotel together in Teotihuacan. And the information around our journeys, our spiritual journeys, is on spiritrecovery.com. Yes, spiritrecovery.com. It's one word, spiritrecovery.com. And then you can order the book through Amazon, the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. You can also order our Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book on Amazon, or you can order it from your local bookstore. Health Communications is our publisher. So, and I love local bookstores. So if you have a local bookstore, go order it from your local bookstore. Take care of the people in your hometown, in your community.
I love that. I love that bit of advice. Well, you have so much wisdom to share with people, because we need it. We need a lot of reinforcement with this. So thank you so much for participating today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I really appreciate it. And have a great day in South Florida.
thank you. And for those of you listening, I look forward to speaking to you again soon.